Damn radio. That is where you are even now, listening to me, Samuel Trapp, and this is International Flavor. You can follow it on internationalflavor.com. I love it when people listen to me. You can call in at 573-746-8020. And I'd be happy to speak with you. We are at our new slot of time that I've coerced JR into allowing me to take over later in the evening. And I like it. Gives me a little bit of time to unwind and get ready for it. I have a lot of topics I want to get into today. And I got at least a week's worth of stuff to talk about. There's been so much going on. It's rather unbelievable. Where I'm going to start with, though, today, I wanted to start with a story that came out. I don't know if you saw it, if anybody watches Telegram or anybody, whatever. I think it's been put out on a bunch of different platforms. People may have seen it. Of an AI robot attacking people, going freaky in a room, you know, in a factory, on a factory warehouse floor. And you can get, and only the video's only 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and it shows this, it's big as a man, you know, made out of whatever it's made out of. It would come as metal, and we all get so paranoid over it because of movies and stuff. So I put together a little bit of a thought process that I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about this morning. So when you go out and you search for this stuff, there's lots of apologetic content. And I found a whole bunch of links to go through that I'm going to just throw them out there and you can follow them yourself. And a few stories. There's a story, for example, in Korea in November of 2023, man was crushed to death by a robot in Korea. And that story, the man had been crushed by a robot after it failed to differentiate him from the boxes of food it was handling. So the incident occurred when the man, who was a robotics company employee in his 40s, was inspecting the robot. They weren't using it correctly because something was wrong with its sensors. Obviously, it crushed the guy. I don't mean to laugh about that, but the robotic arm confused the man for a box of vegetables, grabbed him, and pushed his body against a conveyor belt, crushing his face and chest, said the South Korean news agency. This was a BBC report. It's where this came from. He went to the hospital, but he later died. And I know this is old news. Maybe some of you have heard it before, but I saw this recent one and I was like, man, you know, with all the stuff that comes out in the movies and, you know, whatever it was, iRobot with, was it Will Smith in there, I think, and a couple other shows. There's another one called, I don't know, these robots go out in the desert, and the guy's a British actor. Can't remember the name of that, but I don't know. I wasn't going to mention it. He went to the hospital, but he later died. According to Yonhap, which is the country, the robot was responsible for lifting boxes of peppers and transferring them onto pallets. The man had been checking the robot sensor operations ahead of a test run at the pepper sorting plant in South Gyeongsang province for 8 November, said the agency, and quoted the police. The man, who was a worker manufactured for the company that manufactured arm, was running checks on the machine late in the night when it malfunctioned. In a statement after the incident, the company called for precise and safe systems to be established, you think? That's terrible. And then earlier that year, in South Korea also, a man in his 50s suffered serious injuries after getting trapped by a robot while working in an automobile parts plant. And there's a bunch of stories out there. You can find a bunch of them that go. But I was trying to find one that, you know, because this was a recent thing. And AI is real popular right now. And everything everybody's using AI. I even use AI for a little bit, you know. And I'm just learning how to do it. But it's something to get familiar with. But I don't know. And so I got to wondering whether there was something, you know, when we think about it, we think about those movies that I mentioned, iRobot, whatever the other one was, and Terminator, you know, stuff like that, where robot Sarah Connor's going to come out and get, you know, her son is going to be in trouble and Arnold Schwarzenegger's going to, you know, come and kill us all. But according to AI, okay, this is what AI told me today. There is zero credible, verifiable news from reputable sources within the past 2 years, May 2023 to May 2025, reporting an AI robot attacking its owner. Well, that's interesting because I didn't specify owner, and it didn't include that story that I found on my own. A specific claim surfaced in a post on X on May the 2nd by a user named Digi Jordan, alleging that a $90,000 personal robot developed by Unitree went berserk and tried to kill its creator due to imperfect coding. Now, that's not what I saw on the video. Okay, I didn't see it going berserk and trying to kill its owner. I saw it going berserk and swinging its arm around. You know, and it probably could have killed its owner if it got hit with that. You know, I can't imagine that the robot is going to be too small not powerful enough to do it. This claim lacks corroboration from established news outlets or primary sources, and Unitree hasn't publicly confirmed the incident. And so, basically, I asked whether or not AI could tell me whether there were any in the last 2 years. And I said, you know, and if you find anything, give me the who, what, when, where, why, how, you know, that kind of thing. And the who said no specific individuals are identified. The unverified claim suggests a Unitree robot, but no details. The X post was published on May the 2nd, but there's nothing else in the last 2 years. The location wasn't specified, which is a problem for me. That's, you know, leads to potential for it being a fake news sort of thing to get people commenting on it like I'm doing. The X post attributes it to imperfect coding. Well, I don't know. And then no details. There's nothing there. So basically, then it does write a pretty good article for you if you want to go and check out your AI. It'll do some pretty cool stuff for you. And this one, it basically listed a summary of what it found on the internet for me. And it said that there's public and scholarly concerns about AI robot safety. You think? I mean, none of us know what to think about that. They're selling sex robots in foreign countries that you can go buy a robot. Have you seen any of these on Chinese websites or even on American ones that are out there? And you can buy these things for, they cost some money, I guess. But there's some big money. So they gave us the idea of robots going berserk reflects long-standing fear, often amplified by science fiction. For example, HAL in 2001, A Space Odyssey. A 2025 article notes the anxiety about AI replacing humans or spiraling out of control has persisted for decades. And that's rooted in cultural narrative rather than empirical evidence. Now, why is it twisting this to be pro, or not negative anyway, AI? I don't know. It seems interesting to me. It says that there's some ethical concerns about development where a 2025 Reddit experiment. Researchers posted 1,000 AI-generated comments. So it's not real people placing comments. They have all these bots out there, which is really popular on Telegram, Instagram, Facebook, all these. They got all these bots out there. So you can set up a bot to respond to all of your, you know, to learn from you, to talk about you, things like that. And says over 1,000 AI-generated comments, and nobody disclosed that they were artificial, claiming that that's an ethics violation. Experts like Amy Bruckman called it the worst internet research ethics violation she had ever seen. She said it raised fears that unchecked AI could manipulate or deceive. Well, yeah, but people are making fake bodies. I told this story before several months ago that the first time I got on and played with AI, and there were two things, and it is a worry more for fake news than anything else, because now you can make a person a fake bot to a fake, I don't know, persona on the internet. And, maybe that's the place for people to be transgender, I suppose. I don't know. They could do that. But then they get on and they create these things, and then they can create content. You can even train it to use your own voice. Isn't that crazy? And so there were scholarly warnings about this, after the Reddit, well, before the Reddit thing. But in 2015, a computer scientist named Norbach warned that AI could manipulate human desire, a concern echoed in 2025 discussions about AI's potential to influence people's behavior. Recent advances toward artificial generated intelligence have prompted industry leaders to express safety concern, though specific risks remain speculative. Now, they're starting to use these things to sit with people that don't have anyone to sit with them and do conversations, to speech therapy, stuff like this. So there's plenty of good that can come out of these things if you don't have to worry about them going berserk and killing you. But the video that you had there, or that I had, which you can find on the internet, the facts I gave you before was a look up. The user's name is Digi, D-I-G-I, Jordan. And it's at Digi Jordan, and he posted it on Instagram. And that's how I found it, anyway. But there are advancements, the proliferation of robots, even in the past 2 years, is going crazy. Unitree, Figure AI, Boston Dynamics are developing robots for factories, logistics, and homes. Unitree robots perform synchronized dances at China's 2025 Spring Festival, signaling China's ambition to lead in robotics. UPS and Figure AI are exploring partnerships for humanoid robots in logistics, that can crush people on conveyor belt lines. China's heavy investment, $10 billion in human robots since 2022, and 5,590 patents compared to the U.S.'s 1,442, raise concern about a global robot war. Hey, they're using drones right now for real war, right? What if they were using robots? That's the next step, friends and neighbors. And I don't know that I'm against it. I'm just bringing up the topic. And I don't know, I wanted to use a little bit about it. There are discussions about regulations and safety. So lack of regulation, the absence of global standards for AI robot safety is a recurring concern. This experiment, the 2025 Reddit one, without people, ethically, do you think that you should have to tell somebody, hey, that's not really me, that's a robot answering remotely? Should you have to tell your customer that? There's There's all kinds of stuff. People are using it to answer their telephone for businesses and route them through. There are now AI answering services that follow along in the voice. Now, they drive me freaking crazy. But a lot of people are jumping right on board with that and getting with it. Some people are very optimistic. Some people are cautious. What else did they cite for me in this? Future implication and a critical perspective. And they say the very first thing that this AI answered to me, very first thing. So it gets me suspicious because I'm a suspicious SOB anyway. It says, overhyped risk. The unverified Unitree claim exemplifies how sensationalist narratives can distort perception of AI robots. Isn't that amazing? Anyway, I don't want to go too far into it. There were a bunch of sites that went out. For example, there were AI. Let's see. Let me get the list for you. Invasion of home humanoid robots came from... where is that one? Dozens of, and this one, they have them in there. That's a New York Times article that shows you what it is. The Man Crushed came from the South Korea, the BBC newspaper. An AI robot allegedly attacked, and this video was kind of scary too. The AI robot attacking a crowd in China. What triggered it and could it pose as a threat? And again, I don't, maybe these are fake, but this was from India TV News. And it shows this robot attacking a person, and then a couple of people tackled it. Happened in New Delhi. India TV News, you can search for that. And the time, when was this? February 26, 2025. You can get to, you had the Man Crushed, that was 2023. Here's a robot that nearly headbutted a festival spectator in China. Where is that one? See if I can give you a link on that. That's called The Conversation. It's in the United States edition of that. And that video, humanoid robot malfunctions and attacks a woman, you know. And that had some recommendations on it. It was interesting reading up about it and going through all of these and becoming a little bit better versed in it. But I don't know. I didn't want to spend too much time on it, but I thought it was an interesting topic. I don't know. I'm not sure I'll ever go buy a robot, you know, to help out. And what do you do if you have an old person that needs some help? You want to, are they ever going to be able to be programmed where they're completely safe? Or are you still going to have your operator headspace, as they call the error of trying to program your robot? And who programs it? Do you program it? Do you tell it what it can and cannot do? Or are there fail safes? Or is it like an iRobot where somebody programs it, but then later it tends to wake up on its own and attack you in a crowd like it did in this one in China? I don't know. Interesting stuff. And I like it, but I don't want to read any more about it. I want to talk a little. That was, one thing I did want to talk about. They also had whether or not that was fact or fiction on the AI robot attack. And the one that just happened over the 2 days ago, they decided that one was fake. But these other ones came out as most likely accurate. And I don't know, an interesting topic. I wanted to spend a good amount of time on this one. I've been listening to a lot of discussion, and if there's anybody that wanted to call and talk about it, I'd be happy to talk with someone about it, but I got plenty of content on it. I went and did some research over the last, I don't know, quite a few years to check into this, I believe that there are corrupt judges. I believe that the judicial branch is overly powerful. I believe that something needs to be done in America to modify the judicial branch from what it is right now. I believe that if there are, unchecked judges running the show everywhere who are untouchable, especially on the federal level, although on the state level, in a lot of states, judges aren't touchable either, especially when you get to the appellate level. It's not like they're, you know, Missouri has that judicial retention, which is BS, and it's a crappy system. I've talked about that before, but now it's codified in, not codified, it's actually put in the Constitution, you know, this judicial nonpartisan BS of judicial nonpartisan selection and retention, which is anything but. But now, you know, and they've sold us a bill of goods about this, claiming that lawyers picking judges or the bar, the corrupt bar of Missouri, picking judges is actually better than having the public pick or having an elected governor appoint or something, have an election for everybody in a certain area, that, oh gee, there's too much local control. And maybe when they put this in place for the first time back in the 30s or 40s or whenever it was, maybe there was a lot of union corruption on both sides of Missouri, from St. Louis and from Kansas City, that was maybe needed to be checked. But what it was replaced with might have worked short term, but long term, it's worse even now. It's a governor doesn't get a choice. He gets at least three candidates sent up to him that they have to identify in this ridiculous committee, and this committee tells him he has to pick one of the three, and if he doesn't pick any of the three, the committee picks. How is that? There's zero oversight of any of that. Who the hell oversights that? Okay, so the governor can pick three people to, and he gets to, not to be judges, but to pick three people that can work with the three people appointed by the bar, three lawyers, picked by some BS method, because the only way you get appointed to anything in the bar is by kissing the ass of the bar. And so as a lawyer, if you don't prefer to kiss ass, like I do not, I would have never been appointed to that. And why not? Because everybody knows I would never kiss ass to, be participating in that. I would prefer the system to be controlled by some other point of view than three lawyers appointed by a corrupt bar, you know, or maybe not quite corrupt, but a extremely political bar that, you know, they get to pick who gets to run. But anyway, judicial corruption is a big topic right now, especially with this Judge Dugan and what's gone on in her case. What was she, Wisconsin? The public trust in the judiciary and legal institutions all over the place is really low. There was a Harvard, I think it was Harvard, 2025, or was it 2024? that said an article in 2024 gave a 26%. I'm trying to pull it up. I have it here in my notes where that the bar, the judicial system ranked by Harvard in its own review of the system says that there's a 26% ranking or something like that. Nonsense. I tried to focus my research just on Missouri, and there's not enough judicial retirement and discipline, which is the name of the organization, that would control them in Missouri. So if you want to make a complaint about a judge, you find an organization called the Commission on Discipline and Retention or something like that. Missouri Commission on Judicial Discipline. And I think it's retention, but don't quote me on that. I'm going to try to make sure I have it. Removal. Commission on Retirement, Removal, and Discipline. And it claims, get this, their page on the Missouri Courts website says, the Commission on Retirement, Removal, and Discipline was created in 1972 when voters approved Article 5, Section 24 of the state constitution. Okay, and by the way, that says, and it's pretty short, so I'll go ahead and read it to you. This is from the constitution, right? There shall be a commission on retirement, removal, and discipline composed of two citizens who are not members of the bar appointed by the governor, two lawyers, and here's the key right here, friends and neighbors, two lawyers appointed by the Board of Governors of the Missouri Bar, one judge of, and what gives them all this power? This non-agency group, the bar that runs itself, appoints its members itself, appoints the governor's board itself. And then there's one judge of the Court of Appeals to be selected by a majority of other judges on the Court of Appeals, and one judge of the circuit courts to be selected by a majority of circuit judges of the state. The commission shall receive and investigate all requests and suggestions for retirement and disability, and all complaints concerning misconduct of all judges, members of commissions, of the Judicial Commission, and of this commission. No members of the commission shall participate in any matter in which he has a personal interest. If a member is disqualified to participate in any matter before the commission, then it gives a whole bunch of rules on it. Of the members first appointed, each of the citizen members shall be appointed for a term of 2 years, and each of the lawyer members for a term of 4 years. Each of the judge members for a term of 6 years, and thereafter members shall be appointed for a term of 6 years. Okay? And then they give you the rules of how you do it. This is Article 5, Section 24. Okay? So that is where that comes from. And then this commission, it says, the new article, subsequently amended in 76, established the commission as an independent state agency responsible for investigating complaints against judges in the Supreme Court. I made one time, and it was, the current commission members are listed here. Let's see if we recognize any of them all. Let's see. Judge Gary Gertner, Jr., who's the chair. Eddie A. Justice, a secretary. Heather S. Hall is a member. Judge Laura Johnson, Rebecca Leonard, and Angela M. Woodruff. Members are not compensated, but may receive actual and necessary expenses. The jurisdiction, the Commission of the Jurisdiction of Missouri Judges, Court of Appeals, tells when it has it. It does not have jurisdiction over court employees, work comp judges, federal judges, or court commissioners. Complaints against judges shall be filed with the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel. Those hose bags. The scope of authority is willful misconduct, willful or persistent failure to perform duties, habitual intemperance, such as alcohol or drug abuse, permanent disability, a violation of the Code of Judicial Conduct, and conduct that brings the judiciary into disrepute. Okay? So, I made one complaint against one judge in front of this committee. And what happened was, and I've told this story before, but briefly I'll tell it to you again. There was a loony of a judge who's now a federal judge that was a judge in Lebanon named Gregory Kays. And David Gregory Kays, I think, is his name. And he's now in, I can look him up on Ballotopedia real quick, but he's in the Western District of Missouri. And the guy's a nut. At least he was 20 years ago. And, you know, when he, I don't know what he had done, but I believe he was just, he had never practiced law. What he had done was become a prosecutor, then become a judge. So those type of people, I don't have a, and I, you know, he hadn't been a prosecutor all that long before he became a judge. Okay. And he was a loony of a judge. I remember him, you know, heard stories about him requiring people to come from out of state for traffic tickets. He's one of those guys, right? That it was, by God, it was his court and he was in charge. And he's the guy that was going to hold me in contempt one time. And it was completely crap. You know, it was just nonsense. And he listened. I was negotiating a client's, was going to have her probation revoked. And she'd lived in the state of Kentucky or something like that. I want to say it was Kentucky. That she had lived in Kentucky for 10 years. She had a prison sentence of however many years. And then she had given her instead 5 years of probation instead of the sentence. And at the end of it, only because she did it, well, she had failed a drug screen and she hadn't paid her jail bill. Many people aren't aware that when you get out of jail, you have to pay the jail bill. You know, you get back at the time, it was like 20 bucks a day or something. And so she had spent whatever it was waiting to get to make a deal. And this is how they get people to make deals. They leave them in jail. You know, if they think they're going to run away back to Kentucky, they leave them in jail until they make a deal. So she made a deal. And the deal was the judge gave her, and it might not even have been him, who knows, might have been a different judge from before, but it was his as far as coming back to him for probation revocation. And so the probation revocation comes up. I had just had a car accident. I was in a coma for 10 days. And but right before that, this lady had hired my office. I was with Curtis Hanrahan in Jefferson City, and this was a Miller County case. And we went to Miller County, and I forget the really nice prosecutor. I forget his name, but I always liked him. He was a nice guy, pretty easy to deal with. And we were the only two there that day, and we were trying to settle this case up, and it wasn't going well. I had a check. Her church had taken up a collection for her, and she was going to, you know, they'd come up with whatever the bill was, $2,500 thereabout, had come up with the money for her. And Judge Kays was in, you know, the judicial office, but there's a little bullpen back there behind the courtrooms. And me and whatever this guy's name was, who I liked, we sat in the back and were trying to resolve the case so that we could present something to the judge. And I told him, I said, well, I have this check for you. Her church has collected this money for her. She's been on probation for 10 years. Come on. You know, how about you dismiss the probation? She's done everything good. She's passed everything here, and all it does is shows you money. Well, if you can send somebody to prison, the state gives the county the money, right? The county jail bill gets paid, and that's so the county wants their money back, and they want to send people to prison because then they can have the money. It's the state's obligation, and the state can chase them later for their prison bill and for the county jail bill. And so there's this $2,500 bucks. If they sent her to jail, the $2,500 bucks would be paid by the prison, and then they wouldn't have to collect it, but I already had it. And the church had collected it for her and said, here you go. And here, see if you can resolve it. So I'm talking to this guy, trying to get it done, and Judge Case walks out. Now, by the way, he ain't supposed to hear a word of this, but he has. And he comes out, he goes, Sam, give him the check. He said he's not going to do the deal, but she owes the jail bill, and you have a check made out to the prosecutor. I said, yeah, but I ain't giving it to him. I said, Judge, you shouldn't be hearing this. This isn't for you. This is nonsense. Go away. You can't listen to this. And he's like, no, Sam. He goes, you need to give him that check. He said, that check is written out. But Judge, you aren't even allowed to hear this. You should frankly, give me. And I was trying to be, snippy about it. But trying to not be. I don't want to disrespect the guy, but I told him, you don't have anything to do with this. This is between me and the prosecutor. This has nothing to do with you. And you shouldn't have overheard it. And even if you did overhear it, you're not supposed to force something. He goes, well, that just ain't right. And I was like, look, my instructions are not to give this check unless he dismisses the probation violation, period. And but he didn't. Okay. Now, when I left the office that day, he had tried to coax me 3-4 times into giving this check, and I had told him no. And then many of you remember my horror story of a car accident on HH, and I was in a coma for 10 days and whatnot, and I didn't get back to that courtroom but for a while. And when I got back to my office in Jefferson City, there's Curtis Hanrahan, several 2 months later, basically. And I have this notice of me being held in contempt by Gregory Case. And it says, Gregory Case is going to hold you in contempt, on this case. Meanwhile, they had put that poor girl in prison. She had to serve out her sentence. They put her in prison, got their money back. The check never did give it to them. And, I wouldn't give it. But they got their money some other way and put her in jail. And it was nonsense, and it was only for the money. And at any rate, now I come back, and I've got this notice that I'm to appear personally in front of the judge. This had to be 2006, November-ish. Had to appear in front of him for being held in contempt. I'm going to be, and it's called a show cause order. So this order is, the judge, when he's going to hold somebody in contempt, he has to send this order out that says you need to appear and show to me basically why I shouldn't hold you in contempt because you won't give up the money. Well, hell, now he's not even entitled to the money because if she went to prison, he's going to get the money from the state anyway. But, he wanted it anyway and wanted me to give this check up, and I wasn't going to. Even if, I don't care. But at any rate, I go in the court. This time the courtroom is full of people, and he is there in the courtroom, and I come in, and I think at the time I had a ponytail. I had long hair down to my ass, and I was infamous, I suppose you would call it. And I go into his courtroom, and he sees me come in, and I'm 10 minutes late, because there was bad traffic in through Miller County woods, and I got there, but I wasn't all that worried about it because we knew we were going to sit there all day. There were a buttload of cases on this law day docket, but this was the only thing I had. And so I get there, and he sees me, and he goes, oh, Mr. Trapp, come on up. And he's playing a game, puts me out in front of everybody, and he says, so you got my, I think he said something pleasant about, I'm glad to see you made it through your car accident, blah, 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 something like that. And then he said, are you here to hand over that check? And I said, no. And he goes, what? I said, no, I'm not here to give you a check. I said, I'm here because you want to have a hearing. And if we're going to have a hearing, let's have a hearing. You know, I said, are we on the record? You know, and he goes, no. I said, well, then can we go on the record? And he says, well, no. He said, let's go through on this. And he said, you're not going to give the check. And I said, no, I'm not. And he said, well, why is that? And I said, well, Judge, because I'm not in contempt. Frankly, if you want to hold me in contempt, here's what I say. First, on the record or in writing, besides a show cause order, because your show cause, you know, if you want to have a hearing on it, here's what I'd tell you. Your show cause order doesn't say that you've ever ordered me to do anything. So let's go on the record. You can order me to do something. I can say no. Then you can issue a show cause order to say why I shouldn't be held in contempt. But you can't. You've never told me to do anything, and I'm not a party to this case. I'm a lawyer. You know, I'm not a party. You can't hold me in contempt. But you, until, I mean, you can, but only if you tell me that I have to do something, and then I refuse to do it. So if you want to tell me on the record to, you know, give you the check, and I tell you, no, I'm not going to give you the check, then you can have a contempt hearing, and then we'll have a hearing on that, and you'll make a ruling, and then if you find me in contempt, I'll appeal it. But you can't just come in and say, give up this check. You know, that's not how it works. And he goes, so you're not going to give me the check? And I said, no. I said, I believe we've had this conversation, you know, 2 months ago. I said, now she's in jail, I hear. You know, and he goes, yeah, we revoked her. I said, well, then you're definitely not getting a check. At any rate, that may have been on the record. I don't know. But at any rate, this whole story is over this stupid judicial commission discipline, retirement. What's it called again? Retirement, removal, and discipline. And so he said to me while I was standing there, he goes, so you're not going to give up the check? I said, no, Judge, I'm not. And he said, well, I have other options. I said, well, you better take them then, you know, because I don't know what you mean by that, but whatever they are, you know, fine, take them. And, this is how it's going to be. And so I leave. He says, dismissed, said, have a nice day, blah, blah, blah. And I go back to the office. And about a week later, I got from the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, I got an investigation started against me. Written in a letter by him saying that I hadn't turned over a check that he thought I should turn over. So I wrote a complaint about him, and I sent it in to this commission. Well, you send it in to the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, and they send it to this Commission on Retirement, Removal, and Discipline. And so I sent that to him. And, you know, didn't think much more about it. And that was somewhere in the neighborhood of late 2006. And then in just not too long after that, early, I don't know when he was appointed. Let's see if I can find out when he was appointed a judge. Because, let's see. Judicial career. 2000. Yeah, it was a while it sat there because he got appointed in 2008 is when he, went through all of his federal to be appointed. And he was selected by George W. Bush nominated by him. And he went through all of that process and was a 26th Circuit judge for whatever time it was before that. And so sometime between 2007 and 2008, these two investigations, one against me and one against him, were pending. And sometime while he was getting called and prepped to be the federal judge for the state or for the Western District of Missouri, I got a call from a state senator, somebody. I have no idea who it was, but I got a call from some state senator, and that senator asked me to dismiss my complaint against the judge, against David Gregory Case. And I said, no. No, this is nonsense. I said, what he did, you know, I said, it's not that big a deal. They're not going to do anything to him. You know, I said, I doubt they're going to do anything to me. You know, it's a disagreement. It's, you know, what are they going to do to me? Well, they hunted me down, I think, with his help for a long time, and who no longer has a license to practice law, and who's a federal judge right now. I suppose we could talk about that. And because long term, I lost, but this guy was a quack. I remember, and we always used to have discussions about him going, geez, this guy's a nut, you know, calling people and making them drive across the state or come from out of state for traffic tickets. And the prosecutor didn't want to. He insisted upon it, you know, or you're and he'd lecture them. He'd lecture old guys who come up, and he'd lecture them and go, now you realize, I mean, this is extreme. Okay, this is a do-gooder judge trying to be a nut, and he'd put people who had traffic tickets. He'd make them show up, drive hours and hours, and sit in the courtroom forever over a traffic ticket, and then he'd say, "Listen, I don't believe that traffic tickets are something that we should poo-poo and make a small deal. You realize you drive in my county. I have a family, and it could be my wife and my kids that are driving." And he's giving these stupid lectures over a traffic ticket. He ain't doing anybody any good. It's like, look, I was in a hurry that day. Having had my share of traffic tickets in my life, you know, I have paid off my share of traffic tickets, okay? And said, okay, I've had tickets, and but he wants to bring them there and lecture them. So just little shit like that, pardon my French. But then the other stuff where he's trying to tell you what you're going to do, like me and... Man, I wish I could remember that guy's name. He was a good prosecutor and decent guy, and I liked dealing with him. He was hard. You know, he had some pain-in-the-butt cases with him, but he was a good guy. And I think he was the prosecutor in Miller County, but I don't remember for sure. But he was a real nice guy. And at any rate, this judge is a nut, and he's probably still a nut. And you know, here he is, you know, needing some judicial retirement. And now he's been, geez, that was 19 years ago. If that was 2006, well, 2006 is when I had my my car accident that I was talking about. And I was gone for, that was September 11 of 2006. And I had some... I was out for a month or two before I came back. You know, I'd broken my neck in two places and whatnot. And so I don't think it could have been as early as the following year that I finally got to see him, because I was in recovery for a while. And my jaw was wired shut for a long time because I severed my jaw. And it was quite the recovery. So I think it had to have been sometime in 2007. With him being appointed in 2008, you know, it'd be somewhere in all that time frame. But just stupidity. So my thought process was on judicial misconduct. That story is pretty dumb, and I've told it before, but it's true. You know, it's stuff like this that just drives me nuts. Like this Judge Dugan on April 25th, the U.S. Department of Justice announced criminal charges against Judge Dugan, that lady from, I want to say Wisconsin, for obstructing federal law enforcement operations. She confronted federal agents that were executing an immigration warrant in her house, or courthouse, I mean, and demanded that they leave, and then asserted that they needed to get a judicial warrant. And after being informed of a valid warrant, Dugan directed agents to the chief judge's office. And then this incident occurred amid heightened scrutiny of judicial overreach, particularly in immigration. As of now, the case is still ongoing with no reported conviction or dismissal. Lots of debate on X about it. I don't know if you've read it. You can go to some, like, at Judicial Watch, praising the charges as a check on rogue judges. Other people question the DOJ's motives and suggest political targeting. But political targeting depends on who's in charge of the DOJ, right? Like, you can politically target me if you like, and that's okay. You know, you can't target Jeffrey Kays because a senator will call and go, "Don't you realize he's going to be a federal judge? You practice in federal court, don't you, Mr. Trapp? Don't you think he'd be a pretty good judge?" It's like, you know what? I never complained about the fact what his decisions were when he was sitting on the bench. I've never complained about that. I'm complaining about the fact that he's interfering in a negotiation with the prosecutor, and he shouldn't even have heard it. And once he did hear it, he never should have interfered with it. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, he's overstepping. That is what they call overreach. And judges aren't, you know, they're important. You know, I'm not saying they're not, but that's nonsense. So if you look at it, particularly in Missouri, there was we had a 2015 DOJ report that exposed systemic misconduct in Ferguson, Missouri municipal courts, where judges prioritize revenue, just like Jeffrey Kay or Gregory Kays was doing, through excessive fines and fees disproportionately affecting low income and minority communities. Practices violated constitutional rights, constituting ethical corruption by prioritizing financial gain. All that they knew that she had done, and she had a drug screen that she failed in the first part, but all they wanted was that money. He wanted that money. He was chasing money for the Miller County. The report led to reforms in the municipal court in Ferguson, but no criminal charges were filed against the judges. Of course, it remains a touchstone for discussions on judicial corruption. In 2025, they're still talking about it. They reference Ferguson as evidence of systemic issues in Missouri lower courts. This is a lower court. It's a county court with a case. And look who's a federal judge. You know, relevance in 2025, okay? While it's 10 years old, Ferguson's legacy informs current reform debates, particularly around accountability and judicial ethics. What in the world is this nonsensical Commission on Judicial Retirement and Discipline? That is nuts. There ought to be something else, because who's going to run it? The judge? A judge is not going to penalize another judge. I'd like to see how much exact there was. Maybe we could do a sunshine request and see what they've actually done. There's nothing public, or it would have come out in my search that I would have seen. That how many come out? Very little comes out. I thought it was all supposed to be public. And how do you make a state agency out of that? Nonsense. There's a guy named Joseph B. Williams, judge, 2016. Missouri Judge Joseph Williams was indicted for conspiracy and fraud, a rare instance of overt judicial corruption. This was 2016 Missouri. The case involved allegations of financial misconduct, though specific details, of course, are limited. And this came from reports.web, previous Missouri context, right? While not a 2025 event, ex posts occasionally cite Williams' case to argue for stricter oversight with users like DogeAI_gov calling for investigations into systemic rot among Missouri judges. No new evidence of similar fraud has emerged in 2025, but remember, they don't go after it. These are intended to be silent. You go after guys like me who are, you know, I'd love to get into that story again. I think I'm going to at some point, you know, and go through it all. But don't go thinking that everything is all well and good in the judiciary in the state of Missouri, because it's not. Okay. The establishment, the government, the deep state narrative downplays these kind of incidents as resource driven, but they suggest a culture of expediency. Get rid of this problem. Get it out of the public eye, potentially implicating judges in ethical misconduct. You know, you don't want to have these, you don't want judges, because that's a questioning the system. You don't want to question the system, right? And there's no follow-up. You never get any stories about it. It's all hush-hush, nothing public, nobody questions. And if they do, they get beat up, i.e. Samuel Trapp. End up like Sam, right? Federalist Society's influence on Missouri judiciary. This was 2023. A 2023 ProPublica report cited in an X post by a guy named Eric Garland alleged that the Federalist Society exerted significant influence over Missouri's state judiciary using gangster bloody knuckle tactics to shape judicial appointments. The report suggested that this led to a politicized judiciary. I think the judiciary is extremely politicized, and it potentially fosters corruption through partisan bias, because everybody is appointed and 90% of them are Democrat. 2025, no new news directly confirms any ongoing Federalist Society influence, but the allegation informs about, you know, still present public distrust, because there's plenty of that. The ProPublica's reports, strong language risks exaggerating influence without concrete evidence of bribery. Okay. Not, you know, there was nothing. Mine wasn't bribery. You know, my case was just judge telling me what I was going to do and saying, you know, you don't mess with me in my courthouse. You know, well, you don't mess with me either. You're not supposed to. You know, how are you going to get a fair system that way? And how are you going to, this girl, in my humble view, should have never been put in jail or prison. And if he wasn't the judge, she wouldn't have been. That's what I think. And she hadn't, and I thought she had very good arguments and plenty of good things to say about what she was doing. But sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. That's the judge's decision. I wasn't even around when they put her in prison. I was frankly surprised that they did. I shouldn't have been, but I was. And all he wanted was that freaking check. Nope. The Missouri Bar Association, representing over 20,000 attorneys, plays a key role in judiciary oversight through the Judiciary Performance Review Committee. The Missouri Performance Review Committee in 24 and 25, the committee reviewed 71 judges, including Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, Circuit, and Associate Circuit, and found that all met performance standards per Supreme Court Rule 10.55. Reviews were based on, get this, attorney surveys, case management data, and litigant feedback that ensures transparency. Uh-huh. No new reviews have been reported since October 2024. The next election cycle is 2026. The committee's website provides public access to 2024 findings, emphasizes its commitment to accountability. No 2025 news allege misconduct by the committee or the Missouri Bar in conducting reviews. The committee's independence from the judiciary, I don't believe it's independent, as emphasized by Chairman T- Tucker counters any claim of bias. The committee's unanimous approval of all judges raises questions about whether there's any rigorous review, as no judge is flagged despite public concerns about misconduct. You know, however, the process aligns with the American Bar Association standards, suggesting the procedure is fair. Lack of specific misconduct allegations against the bar strengthens its credibility, which, in my view, there should be none. But public skepticism on X suggests a perception gap. All right, there's something called a Theodore McMillan Judicial Excellence Award, okay? And the activity for this, in September 2024, the Missouri Bar honored Judge Craig Carter and Judge Lisa White Hardwick with the Theodore McMillan Judicial Excellence Award for their integrity and leadership in advancing justice. Carter, who's the presiding judge of the 44th Circuit, and White Hardwick, who co-chaired the Supreme Court's Commission on Racial and Ethnic Fairness, were recognized at the Missouri Bar's annual meeting. The relevance of this? It highlights the bar's role in promoting judicial, ethical conduct, countering corruption narratives by showcasing exemplary judges. No misconduct allegations are tied to Carter or Hardwick. Wasn't that nice? Let's see. So there are no broader concerns that you can find in Missouri. But they're claims that there are systemic issues in Missouri. 2015 Ferguson, 2019 public defender ethics violations highlight systemic pressures, revenue-driven courts, underfunding of public defenders, which is rampant. You know, they don't give them enough money at all, that can foster ethical lapses, though not always criminal corruption. These issues persist. Low trust, here it is. Here's where I found the percentage in my notes. Low trust in Missouri's judiciary, as amplified by X sentiment calling for accountability, aligns with the national trend. 26% trust in government and the judiciary, 26% when people are asked if they trust the government or the judiciary. This is a Harvard Law Review 2024. 26%. High-profile cases like this Dugan chick in Wisconsin exacerbate this problem. No Missouri-specific legislative actions to limit judicial power, term limits, ethics codes are reported in 2025, but there are national efforts like the CERT Act, S-C-E-R-T, the Term Act, but the Missouri Bar, of course, is resisting both of those. Now, I pulled these up, but I have to remember where they are. Give me just a second, and I can tell you a little bit about these, because I believe they are important for people to get behind. The CERT Act is a Supreme Court Ethics Recusal and Transparency Act, aims to increase ethics and accountability within the court, and the Term Act, Tenure Establishment Retirement Modernization, focuses on implementing term limits for justices. Now, I don't believe these are tied only to Missouri, but the CERT Act is to improve ethics and transparency of the Supreme Court by requiring a code of ethics, establishing a mechanism for investigating violations, and increasing disclosure requirements. Key provisions: requires the Supreme Court to adopt a code of ethics for judges, because there isn't one. Create a mechanism to investigate alleged violations of that code of ethics. Improve disclosure and transparency when a justice has a connection to a party or amicus before the court, and require justice to explain their recusal or denial of a recusal motion, because a lot of times they don't have to do that. I'm telling you, there. I want to see some of these. I want to see something. Term limits, I think, would be a big deal. This is really frustrating, especially on the federal level. And I tried to focus it mainly on Missouri, but the federal level is just as big a deal, and it's troubling to me that there's not enough there. Let's see. I think it would behoove people to follow Judge Dugan's case in the Wisconsin court, federal court, and engage with the Missouri, follow the Missouri bar, review judicial performance reports, go to those oversight committees, send some letters to them, collaborate with national groups. There are several groups like PRU, which I forget what that acronym stands for, or Alliance for Justice, which advocate for judicial ethics reform applicable to the states. Okay. Now, I think Missouri is corrupt. Okay. What they did to me is absolutely corrupt. And I plan to go into a little bit more of that, here and on my program, and make sure that people know where it is, because I got boned no matter how you slice it. And not that I didn't do anything wrong. I always try to talk about that. But the Supreme Court of the United States didn't even look. The Supreme Court of the state of Missouri responded to my requests, my lawsuit, basically, in front of the Supreme Court, my discipline case, in one word. How in the world? Seven judges in a room can't agree without 10,000 words what they're going to get for lunch if somebody's ordering lunch. But if you're going to exclude Samuel Trapp from the practice of law, all seven judges can just say no. Zero discussion, zero explanation, zero what you can do to repair that. And they let it go on for 2.5 years. The last time. First time was like 18 months. So if you want to exclude somebody, all you got to do is go to Supreme Court of Missouri and leave it sit out there for 2.5 years. It's nonsense. If they did that to any other license of any kind in the state of Missouri, it took them that long to investigate it, I guarantee you the Supreme Court of Missouri wouldn't allow that. Wouldn't allow the executive branch, who grants all of the licenses in the state, wouldn't allow the executive branch to delay somebody's answer on a license for 2.5 years, or even for 18 months, or even for 3 or 4 months, outside some huge reason why. But they basically wait out those they do not want to practice law in the state of Missouri. First, they cock up all their history by having corrupt, OCDC, Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel workers like Sam Phillips, get in there and solicit complaints after the license of that process I've described here before. And I'd like to go into it again. I'd like people to take notice of this. And the state of Missouri does nothing. The governor says, nope, I can't do anything. The House of Reps, senators, zero, nothing. And so I think it's unfortunate that that they don't have any rules that apply to how you do those kind of requests, you those kinds of options to try to get into the practice of law in Missouri. So some of these sources, we have the U.S. Department of Justice, Kansas City Star, ProPublica from October of 2023, talking about that judge, Missouri Bar, and then Harvard Law Review, the 2024, and then an organization called Transparency International. You want to go look into those. And I definitely encourage you to learn more about the CERT Act and the TERM Act as it applies on the national level. And maybe we can talk some more about that and see if I can't get some people on to debate it with me. That would be a lot of fun. Maybe they'll put me in my place. I'm not against that. Come on, see if Judge Kays will join us. See if he wants to tell a different side of that story. And he might. I don't know. I don't care. I think what he did was nonsense. And, you know, that me dismissing that action against him so he wouldn't have to answer anything about it in his Senate review or Senate confirmation, you know, did him a favor for me. You know, I didn't do anything wrong. I wouldn't have worried about it, you know, for him filing a complaint against me, which was nonsense. Never, you know, that's a vindictive little shit. You know, I pointed out how he was wrong in what he did, because he was definitely wrong, friends and neighbors. And I have a bad habit of standing my ground. And you're not allowed to stand your ground against certain people like him, like Sam Phillips, like the Supreme Court of Missouri. Needed to take that. We're going to change topics, focus up a little bit. So all of you may be aware right now of the Zelensky and what he has said about, and I can't go a full day without talking about something on the Ukraine side, yes? And so the talk of the week, most of it has been about the minerals deal that the U.S. has taken, and Zelensky's veiled threat about May 9 parades in Moscow. Okay, I've followed up a lot on this, and I'm going to talk about this a lot this entire week. You know, there's more news coming every day on this topic, and we're gonna talk some more about it. But whatever he's doing, what he's saying, and his veiled threat of violence, basically what he says is this. All of you leaders, like Xi Jinping, like the Brazilian president, like I think North Korean president is coming. I think so far, Vucic and FICO are still on the list to come. I could have an article about that. Vucic is still expected at the Moscow parade. This came out not long ago. This was a Today article that the article says Serbian President Alexander Vucic is expected to attend Russia's Victory Day. And that, I think, is important. But what they're trying to do is, Zelensky anyway, is trying to frighten everyone away from Moscow. And I have a theory on this. I went and I researched from the last week, ever since Zelensky made his comments, what was it, Wednesday or Thursday, where he said, if you're still planning on going world leaders to Moscow, I can't guarantee your safety. Well, no one's asking him to guarantee their safety. Vladimir Putin announced a 3-day ceasefire from the Russian side, offered it to Zelensky. Zelensky says no, and says we want 30 days. You know, we'll take 30, but we won't do anything else. And then he came out with this statement in his little Instagram channel or TikTok or whatever he's on, and says, all of you people planning on going from other places, we can't guarantee your safety. Kind of a veiled threat. Then his defense minister came out and said the exact same thing. Said we can reach those places and we have plenty of weapons to do it. To basically veiled threat to bomb the May Day parades, the 9th of May. And what I'm surprised at is that our president hasn't come out and condemned this or said to Zelensky or this defense minister, and I don't have his name right in front of me, you attack, you do something against the celebration of the victory against the Nazis on May 9th, which is the biggest holiday in Russia, and you're going to have the largest parade in the history of the last 80 years. This is the biggest one. You have people participating from other countries, including, I think, Vučić's people. He's got a unit from there. And meanwhile, you have Zelensky, instead of taking the 3 days, saying, no, we want 30, they're plotting and planning to disrupt this and attack him, and we're not doing anything about it. Were I the president, were I President Trump, I'd be sending through whatever channels are necessary and public, not, you know, we're not sending him a private communication. We're doing something public and going, look, if you do anything like that and interfere with this huge celebration from all sides, or it should be a celebration from all sides, we will cut you off at the knees. We're done. We're done. You're not going to kill people in a Victory Day parade. You're not going to attack, claiming that the world leaders are not going to be safe. I tell you, I believe, and this is unfortunate, and I've been saying it for months, that Donald Trump is, if he hasn't already, and I've read a couple articles that say he already has, bought this war. This war is now his own. Okay, it is no longer Joe Biden's war, because we have, what do we have? Come on, friends and neighbors, what do we have? We have a rare earth minerals deal. That's what we have. And so now we could, and Trump could, and in fact, there's talk about this from the Russian side, that now Trump could say, well, it's our rare earth minerals. We have the contract. Russia, Vlad, don't do this. Don't you better stop right now, because we're going to put our forces on the ground in Ukraine and force you to fight them. I don't see this as a de-escalation. I see it as an escalation. And there's a report, and I have enough time to play it, I think. So here was Robert Fico. And the interpretation, the translation was reasonably good. And I think that the sound was okay. It's 8 minutes, and we're going to play it from the very beginning. Here goes. I hope it comes out all right.
Ladies and gentlemen, I must respond to external factors. Firstly, I must object to the statements of Ukrainian President Zelensky, who seem to threaten what might happen during the celebration.
This is Slovak Prime Minister Fico, Robert Fico, and he's slamming Zelensky right here. This came out not too long ago. I think today, earlier today, 8 hours ago, this came out.
...of the victory over fascism on May 9th in the Russian Federation. This is unprecedented. To me, it's simply laughable. As if Mr. Zelensky is sending us a message. I'm a small player, it's not about me. And he's sending messages to the Chinese president, to the Brazilian president, to presidents and heads of state and prime ministers from countries with hundreds of millions of inhabitants, saying, don't go there. Beware, because we, Ukraine, will do something to you. That's not how it's done. I reject such threats in the name of security. I fully respect that the security of the participants is an internal matter of the Russian Federation. But likewise, if Mr. Zelensky believes that his outcries will result in foreign delegations not attending, He is gravely mistaken. However, I had to object to such a manner of expression. I am very sorry that Mr. Zelensky and others are mixing the past with the present. For heaven's sake, it was also Ukrainian soldiers who were dying from 1941 to 45 and were dying en masse in the Second World War. On the contrary, it was necessary to accept the proposal for mediation regarding the celebration of the 80th anniversary, and at the very least, if not, to congratulate each other on the end of the Second World War, then to remain silent. It is a great disrespect if someone in a country that had the greatest contribution to the victory over fascism and suffered the absolutely greatest sacrifices imaginable is sending a message. Well, go ahead and celebrate. We might just throw a little drone or something similar your way. These are unacceptable things for me. I will not mix modern politics with what happened in the years 1941 to 45. Otherwise, I would have to look at the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, and that would prevent them from doing anything at all in international politics. As for my participation, I know there's a huge fuss about it. I would recommend to Mrs. Kalashova, and others to focus on more serious issues than whether I will or will not attend the 80th anniversary celebrations. I'm simply going to the 80th anniversary celebrations. But I will also tell you some amusing stories about how some European Union member countries don't want to allow the government plane to fly over. These are embarrassing matters. It's embarrassing. If you want to fly over the territory of the European Union to somewhere and they tell you no, you cannot fly over us. Can you imagine what I'm talking about now? Where have we ended up in terms of international relations? I will allow myself to say two sentences regarding the internal matter in Ukraine, and that is the agreement on the use of mineral resources, which was officially signed in only one version. But it seems that there are three agreements that discuss the implementation of the basic agreement and the conditions. The agreement between the United States and Ukraine is a matter for the Ukrainian leadership. What kind of treaty? The Ukrainian leadership signs or does not sign, it is their natural resources. It's none of our business. I just want to remind you that similar treaties have already been signed with the devil. If Slovakia strategically controlled power plants, gas companies, and everything today, we would live completely differently. So this treaty, which is signed between the United States and Ukraine, is exactly the same kind of treaty that someone makes to achieve a certain goal. And let Mr. Zelensky burst with anger now. I know why he signed it. Mr. Zelensky bought himself a war. Mr. Zelensky is very keen on continuing the war and thinks that with this treaty, if he signed it, it's as if he has subdued the United States in peace efforts, which American President Trump made so clear from the first day of his office. It's their decision. But in my opinion, this treaty, ladies and gentlemen, this treaty, you know, as my words often come, means that the war continues and can last for a very, very long time, and may also lead to an escalation of tensions. And therefore, I regret that at least such a small offer, like a ceasefire, from the 8th to, let's say, the 11th of May, on the occasion of the celebrations, which was proposed by the Russian administration, was not respected. I would like to remind you that this is a war in which people are dying, and it is a war that I, unlike your newspaper, unlike many opposition politicians, have been rejecting from the first day. I have been rejecting it from the first day, and from the first day, I have been calling for peace negotiations to begin. Already in April 2022, when this war began, there were peace agreements on the table, which Ukraine, however, did not sign under the pressure of Western allies, because they thought this war would serve to weaken the Russian Federation. I will not get into a dispute with you now But I would have to ask, did you write about Odessa from May 2nd, 2014, when they let 42 people burn in the trade union's house without those pro-Russian sympathizers? It is important to know what happened in the years 41 to 45. And that is my mental equipment. I simply consider it important, as we will do on the 8th here in Slovakia, because in Peshtani, there is an official celebration of the end of the Second World War, to express respect and honor to the nation and to the countries that played a decisive role in the defeat of fascism. The war was the subject of my almost two-hour conversation with President Putin during my visit in December, and it still is. We constantly encourage and speak about it, as we did when we were in the United States. If you take my speech at the SIPAC conference, I will always repeat it over and over. This war must end as quickly as possible. So, if the biggest problem again is that I am supposed to go somewhere to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the end of the Second World War, where other world leaders will also be present, Bonnet, and you do not consider the Chinese president, the Brazilian president, and many others, Sihi, as significant representatives of this world, then that is your opinion. I have a different opinion on that. I think we are having a completely unnecessary discussion right now. I am going to come.
I think that is very well done on his part. And I'm running up against a time limit. And Ukraine now is pressuring Russian. They're sending, over the last few days, they've sent hundreds and hundreds of drones into Russia, hundreds and hundreds of missiles. So in the update says this, the proposition, I believe that what they're going to do is they're trying to overwhelm Russian defenses for the next 4 or 5 days. You're going to see a huge increase in them to hopefully have Russia run out of air defense capability so that on the 9th, they can attack something. And so on May 4th, in Novorossiysk, they shot down two Su-30 jets with sea drones. It's a high escalation. On May 3rd, 255 drones, 12 missiles. Ukraine's drone production, 1 million FPV drones in 2024 and 3-4 million slated for 2025. The Crimean Bridge is a major target, so I believe they might have a idea to attack that. May 3rd attack on Crimea suggests that this is an ongoing deal. Victory Day, May 9, is a very high-profile event. Dmitry Medvedev gave a great warning, which I won't be able to play till tomorrow. I don't have enough time to get through that. He said he warns about Kyiv's survival if Ukraine attacks Moscow during celebrations May 9th. Zelensky says, no, we need a 30-day ceasefire, and that's that. But likelihood of success. Ukraine's ability to overwhelm Russian air defenses by May 9 hinges on sustained drone and missile supplies, innovative tactics, and good intelligence. So the U.S. should cut them off. The Novorossiysk jet strike shows technological advancements, but Russians' adaptations, electronic warfare, fiber optic drones, are a challenge for them. Crimean bridge attack is more feasible than a Moscow attack, so watch out for that. And then that's about it, friends and neighbors. Hope you join me again tomorrow night. Hope you enjoyed the show. My name is Samuel Trapp. You've been listening to International Flavor. I had something I wanted to do. Listen to this. Oh, yeah. How about this? How about the golf clap? Yay. And then let's play a sad horn. I don't know how that has anything to do with anything I'm doing, but I wanted to play that just because I found him. How about the air horn? Or crickets. And then last one. There you have it. So I will be in again tomorrow night, 9 p.m. New time for the show is 9 p.m. You can always get on internationalflavor.com and listen to all the old shows. You can call in for any of the shows. Write down the number if you'd like, 573-746-8020. Get on damradio.com/schedule and listen to all the other great shows on our station. Please continue to tune in, and we're very appreciative and happy to have you. Have a very good evening.